This time on Ask Christian Counseling Associates, join us with our panel guests, including attorney Alan Parker, author of Reversing Roe v. Wade, as we explore the expanding mission of the Foundation for Christian Counseling and its pro-life mission. Learn more about how families are affected by post-abortive trauma and moral injury, and what can be done to save lives. Welcome, Tom. Great to have you with us today. Welcome, everybody. Today is our Foundation for Christian Counseling podcast. So all about, what is the foundation about? What are we doing with this mission? And we're going to have some special guests today. Very excited. So we're gonna have some people online with us as we meet. We're in the midst of doing our dinner auctions. By the time people are looking at this podcast, we will have had events in Newcastle, Greensburg, and Morgantown, West Virginia, to raise funds for our charitable mission to the community. So everywhere that CCA operates, we raise money to make sure that people can have access to faith-based mental health and addictions recovery services, as well as other exciting initiatives that we'll tell the folks about today. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things we do, and you're well acquainted with this, is for about 3 months, we reach out to businesses mm-hmm. and we ask them to sponsor us and to give items for auction at our dinner. So I ran across this potential sponsor, and Camden, if you could put this up on the screen to take a look at this. This is from Taco Bell. It caught our attention.
Jeez.
Is it this video?
No, it's the chalupa behind it. There we go. So if you could make that large on the screen, so we all could see it. The press release says that Taco Bell releases new "Every Day We Stray Further from God's Light" Chalupa Supreme. And so this caught our notice. Mm-hmm. And the article reads: Taco Bell has unveiled its latest culinary creation, the "Every Day We Stray Further from God's Light" Chalupa Supreme. The fast food chain, known for its innovative and questionable menu items, has once again pushed the boundaries of gastronomic experimentation. The new Chalupa Supreme boasts a medley of flavors that will, quote, once again have you sitting alone in your car after midnight, questioning your life choices with every bite. We wanted to create something that really encapsulated the essence of existential crisis that our food is known for, said Taco Bell's chief culinary engineer Mark Rodriguez. And what better way to do that than with a crispy chalupa shell filled with seasoned beef, nacho cheese, and 43 other ingredients we are too embarrassed to say out loud.
You just can't pronounce it.
According to Rodriguez, if you're looking for the perfect combination of Mexican cuisine and regret, then the Chalupa Supreme is perfect, the perfect meal for you. Reaction to the new menu item has been mixed, with some customers praising Taco Bell for continuing in its innovative approach to fast food, while others question whether humanity has gone too far. Quote, I took one bite and my taste buds felt like they were exploding. This was immediately followed by shame. Lots and lots of shame, said one bewildered patron. But then I went back to order seconds, so Taco Bell has done it again. At publishing time, Taco Bell announced that the new Who Am I and What Have I Become burrito and the Midlife Crisis Crunch Wrap Supreme are now available in participating locations. So that's not a real article, but just something funny as we begin, because supporting this cause, Tom, I want to tell the folks that they're not going to go through an existential crisis when they come to our events. We have a really great dinner for them, mm-hmm. So they're not going to be out in their car wondering what they ate. It's a great time. and You get to find out how many people are in support of this mission we're going to tell you about today, and some amazing things that have happened this year with our mission. Mm-hmm. And so I'm excited to talk about this. And one of the things, the primary thing that we do is our counseling grants, mm-hmm. but it's become so much more. And so we have a video about that. Mm-hmm. Let's take a look at it.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Dr. Rich Hoffman, president of the Foundation for Christian Counseling. In 2024, our foundation experienced remarkable growth, broadening our reach and impact. I'm humbled and excited to announce that, effective as of January 1st, Concepts of Truth International has joined the foundation, uniting our efforts to offer compassionate support and guidance to those in need. Concepts of Truth is renowned for its life-affirming National Crisis Call Center, providing confidential counseling to women and families affected by trauma from reproductive loss, such as abortion, miscarriage, or for those actively facing a pregnancy decision. We are there at the point of contact. Through God-honoring support, we aim to reassure these individuals that the church stands by them in their time of need. Additionally, Concepts of Truth delivers Christ-centered sexual health programs to churches and schools nationwide, advocating for stronger, healthier families in our communities.
Hi, I'm Millie Lace, founder of Concepts of Truth International. For over 20 years, our call center has been a beacon of hope for thousands of women and families. Our mission has expanded globally since becoming an NGO at the United Nations in 2015, where we uplift our Christian identity and life-affirming principles on an international platform. In 2022, our prayers were answered, praise God, with the overturning of Roe v. Wade, sparking a positive shift in the abortion discourse in our nation. Now, with the merger with the Foundation for Christian Counseling, I am humbled and excited to see a new chapter unfolding as we carry our mission forward for generations to come. Every year, the FFCC raises funds to offer counseling grants to individuals and families in need of support. These grants are filling the gap and serving as a pathway for people to engage Christian counseling services, giving them an opportunity for transformation and personal growth.
In conjunction with our merger with Concepts of Truth, the Foundation is excited to announce an expansion of our international mission to Liberia. This year, our counseling program, CCA Liberia, plans to acquire an initial 40 acres of farmland to launch our agricultural development initiative. This will serve as the cornerstone of our services in our Liberia program, empowering those in a challenging environment to enact sustainable initiatives that rebuild their nation's economy after being devastated by years of civil war. Join us, and with God's help, you will transform communities one family at a time.
So pretty cool, huh?
Awesome video.
I mean, wow. Just a lot of things going on this year. So the primary thing, though, that we've dealt with, for the past 6 years, we've been primarily interested in giving counseling grants. Mm-hmm. So we're both counselors at CCA, as well as you're a clinical supervisor here, and I do a lot of the clinical supervision as directing at CCA. We're well aware that out of the 5,000 referrals that we get per year, about 7 to 10% of those are in some type of crisis, mm-hmm. And part of what people bring along in crisis is financial problems. So a lot of organizations will have to turn those people away as they have fee structures or mm-hmm. they take insurance, and these people are falling through the gap.
Yeah.
Have you ever, share a specific story how you've seen that happen with us?
Yeah, I just see more trends than stories, because I'm like, oh, there's so many. But, people don't come to counseling because they have their life totally, completely, 100% together. And sometimes that means employment. It's frequent that happens that people have to stop coming in because of, you know, they're doing great work in the counseling and then just unexpectedly they're laid off. And sometimes they're the insurance holder, sometimes their spouse is the insurance holder, and the disruption in the services can be really detrimental. And especially when they're in crisis, you worry about things such as, you know, safety to themselves, safety to people around them. And if they're not receiving that care, they've lost that structure and those access to those tools and to be experientially working through those tools. And it's really a big risk that isn't really filled in there by insurance companies or other places. And that's where the foundation.
If people are actively struggling and in that kind of place.
Yeah.
It's great to have them connect with a mental health resource or an addictions recovery resource. Mm-hmm. And it's a big risk to just to let that go.
Yeah.
And there's just not a lot out in the community for people to, you know, access.
Right.
So we have a saying that when donors give, they're filling the gap.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we've always been after. We have this picture of a person walking in the desert that we talk about every year at the foundation, the person who is lost, alone, and in pain. They're hurting. And it's like they're lost. And we have a network that naturally comes into contact with those type of people, hundreds of people. So this year, we've served over 400 people with grants. We've dispersed over $80,000 in support. And that is a big program of the foundation, and it fills that gap. We find the people who can't make it anywhere, and they're coming to us. And so that allows our help to be sustainable. We can take them all the way through a process and stay in contact with them in a time of crisis, where who knows what would happen. And we've gotten a lot of really great feedback on that. But we want the community to know that, you know, it's a great thing to support, that people would not be alone in a time where it could be life-threatening. Or things could be so out of control that it will affect the people around them. And instead, they're coming here and they're being supported, and we're getting things back on track.
Yeah.
So that is an exciting thing, you know, about our foundation is growing. We provide access to faith-based mental health resources to those in financial need, and primarily that's happening through counseling grants. Now, along this year, you know, we've been doing a lot of talking about concepts of truth. We're going to have some special guests here today to
talk about
what's coming next with the foundation. So tell me, you know, we've been messaging that across CCA and across the clients, but how do you see, what do you see going on with Concepts of Truth? If you were to tell the folks, okay, this is what it's all about.
Yeah. For me, like it's a little reminiscent of, you know, what I've done in quote unquote past life and being very involved in the pro-life movement. The organization I worked with before here was, and although we've been, you know, unapologetically pro-life, it's, you know, now this gives an avenue to work through that and to, you know, provide resources for people who are in crisis. And I mean, it's very much in need. The organization I worked with beforehand had their funding cut from the governor, which is an absolute complete travesty. I think it leaves people more vulnerable, more marginalized, and those people who are in crisis and need help now have less help. So now we can come in and very, you know, fill that gap. You know, and it's very eager to see what
it's another place to fill the gap.
Yeah.
And so, so Concepts of Truth, what we've acquired in the work of the foundation is two core services. One is the call center.
Yeah.
So there's a nationwide crisis call center that reaches people in crisis as they're considering issues of life. people who are considering pregnancy,
mm-hmm.
and whether or not they are going to carry that to term.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have something very real here where people have chosen abortion,
mm-hmm.
and they realize that they've been harmed. They've been traumatized.
Mm-hmm.
And not only do they realize that this was wrong,
yeah.
in their life, and they're ready to come to grips with that, they are experiencing a lot of emotional or mental health issues,
mm-hmm.
Because of what has occurred, that they're seeking help for.
Mm-hmm.
And so the crisis helpline, mm-hmm. With Concepts of Truth will take calls all across the country, and it comes through networks that we're going to talk about today.
Yeah.
And we help people. Mm-hmm. We provide counsel for them to be able to deal with what's happened.
Mm-hmm.
And we're life affirming.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is the United Nations. We're
yeah.
an NGO or a non-governmental mm-hmm. organization. That's what that stands for. But we're a registered entity that is involved with getting in contact with other countries and nationwide influences in the life affirming movement.
Yeah.
And for that, there's just a lot that Concepts of Truth and the UN piece is Concepts of Truth International.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do family life advocacy program through that.
Yeah.
That we advocate for stronger families,
mm-hmm.
Through several different programs.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that nationally and internationally.
Mm-hmm.
So the merger with Concepts of Truth that happened this year,
mm-hmm.
with the Foundation for Christian Counseling really gives us a comprehensive program.
Yeah.
of giving back to the community. And what we would tell our donors, people who are finding out about this and that we're talking about today, it's doubled our budget.
Mm-hmm.
And we exist and do these projects solely through sustainable giving,
mm-hmm.
from donors.
Yeah.
So so that is, that takes you through, and we'll come back to more about specifically what Concepts of Truth is,
mm-hmm.
Because people can always count that their giving is going to cover our counseling grants,
yeah.
but we want to dive into the mm-hmm. people involved in Concepts of Truth. So we have mm-hmm. we have some special guests. I'm very excited to have the founder of Concepts of Truth, Millie Lace, back with us again. And Millie and I have been working together, for some time now. So we have a lot of contact, and I'm even more excited, to introduce for the first time to our podcast guest, Alan Parker. Alan Parker is, a well-known attorney, but for those who do not know him, he argued the case at the Supreme Court level that overturned Roe versus Wade.
But I just do want to correct that, because sometimes people think that means orally argued the case, and very few lawyers do that. We filed written arguments in the case in 5 different briefs representing thousands of women hurt by abortion, as well as 500,000 Americans who believed that abortion was a crime against humanity and signed the Moral Outcry petition. So I appreciate that, but just want to make sure that they don't think I was the lawyer standing up orally arguing. There's one did that. That was the Mississippi Attorney Solicitor General of Mississippi, and Mississippi did a great job defending the law on abortion that was upheld and that reversed Roe v. Wade. And we did many, many arguments, but they were all in writing at the court. And I appreciate your just giving the opportunity to clarify that. Thank you.
Alan, I'm super excited to have you here to really delve into this, because you're right. People will hear this and get a picture in their mind of what this must have been. You lived through this and were involved in it. and it's more than what people think. And so in the short time that we have here, because you can only be with us here for a short time, if we can get deeper into this, and you wrote a book on this called Reversing Roe versus Wade, and we're going to show an image of that up on the screen to the folks. But we really encourage people who really want to delve into this historic event that has been worked on for over 50 years now, you know, how that came to be. So I want to just give you a chance to address our audience and tell them, you know, what part you took in that, and that very important piece. That there are many women that you've come into contact with, family members, who have been traumatized. That's what they're reporting to us. We see that same thing here. It's something that's not talked about. That was evidence that was collected because people will deny that. But it's very important to realize when somebody comes to us and says they're struggling, they're hurting, we have to take notice. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing that the public doesn't really hear about. But please let me give you the floor here for a little bit. And just could you tell us more about your experience?
2000, I was called by the Lord and had the opportunity to represent Norma McCorvey, who was the Roe v. Wade, and Sandra Cano, who was the Doe of Doe v. Bolton. And these two cases together brought abortion on demand as a constitutional right, supposedly, to the United States. So they were the, quote, winners of landmark litigation where the Supreme Court said there's a right to an abortion. And we represented them in their legal efforts to reverse their own cases. That had never happened before in American history. People who won landmark cases went back to the Supreme Court to say we were wrong. And in Norma's case, she never had an abortion. Well, neither party ever actually had one. They both, well, Norma wanted an abortion, but she later began to work in abortion facilities and see how bad it was. And her conscience began to bother her. And she said, God help me, and she gave her life to Jesus Christ at a church meeting where one of the sidewalk counselors had invited her to come to church. So she heard John 3:16, and the story is told in more detail in the book. Her sworn testimony, what she told, that she told to the Supreme Court in her legal effort to reverse the Roe case, is in the court, is in the book. The other party was Sandra Cano, even less well-known than Norma McCorvey. Doe, but more relevant today, because Roe is gone. Praise God. And no more. But now they're trying to bring back the health exception. Okay, you can ban abortion except to save the life of the mother or for the health of the mother. And it sounds so appealing. Of course we want everyone to have good health. That's what your business, your profession does. And we're glad that you're helping women to have good mental health. But the court said in Doe that health includes psychological well-being, and psychological well-being includes happiness. So if a woman says, I wouldn't be happy having a baby, it'd be stressful on me, and I don't want this baby, and it'd cause me problems, then she can get an abortion. And if one doctor, the one she's paying to do abortions, agrees, then it's just between her and him. That is basically the Israeli policy. They have a medical committee, but 99% of the times they get one. So a health exception is abortion on demand. And the truly deceptive thing that's in the book, you can read the story, her sworn testimony before the Supreme Court is there, it says she never wanted an abortion. It's a lie in the case that says, I can't take care of my children. I want to have them aborted. That never happened. She'd already had some children taken away by Child Protective Services in her state because she had a hard life. She never wanted to kill a child. That story is in the book, and that was fraud on the court. And then the other thing, that, so we took those back to the court, and the other thing that really directly relates to us today and the fantastic work y'all do is the Lord sort of said, collect the testimonies of women hurt by abortion, because there's two lies. Number one, it's not a baby. And number two, it's good for women. And the best way, perhaps the only way, to show and document by evidence is through the sworn testimony of women hurt by abortion. So that birthed Operation Outcry, Silent No More. Now we just call it Operation Outcry, so that women can anonymously, if they want to, they have to swear to it, but we'll protect their identity in court as they tell us whether to use their full name, first name, or initials only. Their story can be told to the Supreme Court. And it was the evidence of women that in 2007, 7 years after we started, got the court to reverse a 2,000-year-old Supreme Court decision where the Supreme Court had said no state can ban any kind of abortion, even partial birth abortion, where I hope children aren't listening, but the baby is pulled almost completely out of the womb except for the head and then crushed, and a dead baby's pulled out.
So we, you know, this is talked about in debate settings and how some of the gruesome procedures that mm-hmm. are involved. But what you've mentioned so far, just to make clear to everybody who's listening, these two cases, Norma McCorvey and then the second person who was Cato, they both reversed their testimony. That was a big part. But there's also, back in 1973, we didn't have the technology to really clearly see that life begins at conception. And now we do. And also, this narrative that people would be harmed if we did not make this available on demand. Now we're seeing the trauma in many, many cases of women who experience abortions who have been deeply psychologically harmed and will testify to that. And that's all in your evidence and what you've collected together, what you talk about in the book, that we really need to take in.
And that's exactly right. And now we're going forward from reversing Roe v. Wade to making abortion illegal and unthinkable in all 50 states. And there's been a dramatic turnaround already. Some people are very discouraged in the pro-life movement. But think about it. When Roe was the law, all 50 states protected abortion pretty much up to the moment of birth. But now, 15 to 20 states ban abortion. A third of America in just two short years have banned it. And here's the arguments. And people can sign the Moral Outcry petition on our website if they'd like to. Why should a state ban or make abortion illegal? Number one, it's a crime against humanity. It's killing a human being. Number two is abortion hurts women. Just what you've been talking about, what you're trying to help across America alleviate that pain that comes from taking the life of their own child. Number three, though, is kind of a new argument, that no woman has to parent a child in America if she doesn't want to. There is a safe haven law in all 50 states, and under that law, a woman can safely surrender her child at a hospital or fire station at the moment of birth or up to a certain period of time thereafter. And she can be free of parenting, which is why women get abortions. No woman really gets an abortion to kill a child. I want to kill a child. There may be a few, sadly, in America that do that, but not the vast majority of women. They just say, I can't take care of a baby, or I don't know what to do. What am I going to do? I can't bring this child to birth. I have no strength to deliver the child. Well, Safe Haven says, don't kill the baby. Don't hurt yourself. Give us the baby through the Safe Haven law, which is free to the woman, unlike expensive abortion, and has no abortion-related trauma whatsoever. If you don't have an abortion, you can't be traumatized by it. And then number three is what's going to happen to those children? There are 1 to 2 million families every year waiting to adopt newborn children. So it's the love, love, love solution. Love the baby, love the mother, love the families waiting to adopt newborn children.
If I get all what you're saying, Alan, and that would be my next question for us to grapple with. Now that Roe versus Wade has been overturned, what are the next steps? I hear you saying the next steps are to work state by state to overturn Roe versus Wade there, or overturn the right to abortion that was suggested in those court cases.
There's three ways we could make abortion illegal everywhere in America. Number one, each state could ban it. We're a third of the way to doing that. Number two, in theory, the federal government could pass a law banning abortion as being inimical to human life. It's not, you can't do it. It's a murder, and the federal government could prevent it in the practice of medicine and interstate commerce. And then number three, and which is the one I think will happen and that I would urge your audience to pray for the most. Ultimately, what the Dobbs case did in reversing Roe v. Wade, they said there is no right to abortion in the Constitution. That had to be done. That was the first step. Now they need to find the right to life that is expressly in the Constitution. Is there a right to life in the Constitution? Everyone in America can say, of course there is. It's in writing. You don't have to search for it in the dark shadows of the Constitution, the penumbra, like Roe did. No. Where is it written? I will quote it. And by the way, it's now on the inside walls of the U.S. Supreme Court in their public hallway. The Fifth Amendment says, no person shall be deprived of property or life. No person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. So there's no person shall be deprived of life. And the other is the 14th Amendment. No person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. So it's in the Constitution twice. The only question that needs to be decided now is, when does life begin? Or even more important, what did the people at the time of the ratification of the Fifth Amendment and 14th Amendment, what did the people of the United States think life meant? And if you asked anybody back then, you say, hey, see that pregnant woman? Is there a human life in her? Of course, you idiot. What's the question? Their term for pregnancy was with child. I'm with child. Long before the baby was born, they were calling it with child. And the law protected the children even from murder, but also gave them benefits. Like if the parents died before the child was born, when the child was born, they got to inherit property. So it's just a matter of time before the U.S. Supreme Court, in an appropriate case, says, oh, there is a right to life in the Constitution. That's the next step. But needs a lot of prayer and a lot of fighting. So your audience can do any one of those battles. The state level is critical. The federal level is critical. And then the lawyers and the Supreme Court are critical. We need to pray for the Supreme Court. They can be active in electing the other two levels of government.
I will pray for that and allow these three things to crystallize in my mind. What you're saying, you know, just to wrap my mind around all of that, it takes a while to think about. I can tell that you're, of course, very geared. You've been fighting this battle a long time, and the people around you, and you're experts, and it's appreciated. One thing that I reflect on with this is the polling, where everybody is at right now, and I wonder what your thoughts are on that, and maybe we can bring Millie in on this to talk about too. That the polls look like it's, and I don't want to misquote, but it's around like 60-30, you know, or 35-65, 65% opposing a total ban of abortions. And then recently the political climate seems like there's not going to be a move from conservatives to support a total ban, that, and it's because it's politically unsustainable. So we could, if that's anywhere near accurate, there's a lot of people out there right now that don't know what to think about this. Mm-hmm. What happens there? How do we address this together nationwide to really get to a place where we could overturn abortions or ban abortions across the country without everything getting ballistic?
And to understand the situation, and you don't really have to be a lawyer to understand this. Life is simple. Every human being actually knows it. Even most women know it in their heart. That's one of the reasons why abortion is so terrible to women. They begin to feel badly, sometimes right away. Sometimes they believe the lie. Oh, they told me it's just a mass of tissue. Then later, the second baby, the wanted baby, they say, would you like to see a picture of your baby? Would you like to hear the heartbeat? I remember one of our women saying, there's no heartbeat. There's no heartbeat. It's not born yet. And then she hears the heartbeat. And instead, what should have been a joyful time of her life, I'm pregnant. Look, there's my baby. You know, very happy. She was gripped with sadness, grief, and shame and started crying. She killed her first baby because they lied to her. So number one, we have to get out the stories and the women, courageous witnesses who've been through a healing program like Millie Lace's incredible program. And there are three ways to get healed. God can miraculously heal somebody right away. And you know, like your bones can be healed. You can get a miraculous healing. Number two, there are some incredible lay groups where women get together, study the Bible and read it and get tremendous help from that. And then there's professional counseling that some people need because sometimes it produces very deep and long lasting trauma or that affects other areas of life. And professional counseling can be helpful in those cases. But the women who've been healed, and Millie has been doing this for almost 23 years, over 20 years, as a woman who's also had her own abortion that I'm sure she'll talk about here in the podcast. The women have to be the ones who lead the way. We are now starting Women Hurt by Abortion listening sessions across America. We're going to be doing it to legislators. We're going to be doing it to the media. We're going to be in small towns, in churches, everywhere this is needed. And then do two things. The women invite you to a session. We are the women of our state who've had abortions. We want to tell you what it's like. And then they're going to describe the suicide attempts, drug abuse, feeling inadequate, just all the things that Millie can talk about. Just go on and on. Sexual dysfunction, anniversary reactions, complicated grief, nightmares of a bloody baby at the back of your bed. You know, things like this that most people don't even understand. Then they're going to say, so we don't want any more women of our state to go through this when we have a safe haven alternative nobody even knows about. There's no reason to enshrine Roe v. Wade, the right to abortion, in our Constitution. We have a better alternative that's free, unlike expensive abortion. We won't lie to you like the abortion industry does. It's free. Simply relinquish your child at a hospital or fire station. Then the third simple argument is, hey, and if you're a woman right now and you're pregnant, you don't even know how to pay your medical bills. You're thinking, how can I care for a baby? I can't even pay my medical bills. Well, then you qualify automatically right there for Medicaid, free medical care, prenatal care, delivery, aftercare in every state in the union. You're not alone. We have the government safety net of the safe haven law, and then we have private social networks groups like crisis pregnancy centers and other government safety programs that will help you if you don't want it. No woman should have to have an abortion because she can't afford it. We as a society take care of all that. But if you just don't want the child, you're not ready to be a parent, you can use the safe haven law in every single state and not have trauma for the decades in many, many cases, usually until you get some kind of healing and forgiveness. And are able to forgive yourself through counseling, particularly once you understand that Jesus Christ does forgive the sin. It's a sin. It's terrible. It produces grief and trauma and disaster, but it's not the unforgivable sin. And there is help and healing through professional counseling and through Jesus Christ and the Church of Jesus Christ, where these programs should also be available in churches across America.
Amen. Thanks for all what you're sharing, and I know our time is short to have Alan Parker here, so I want to bring in Millie and have a chance to interact with Alan, and hopefully Millie, you can stay on after Alan goes. Millie, you're muted, so you want to take off your mute button, just of all we've talked so far. Concepts of truth, and we're going to show a lot of the information that Alan has shared. We're going to show up on the screen for our audio listeners. If you look at the video, you'll see Alan Parker's information, some of the resources that he has talked about. But you can also call our crisis helpline at Concepts of Truth, and we'll show that number and get access to all of these resources. And so if, you know, many listeners out there have been affected by abortion, they have been harmed, traumatized, and really might not know where to go to start dealing with this. And this is the reason we have Millie and Alan here today, to send a message to the public that there's resources here that you can access. But Millie, let me have you enter in, and anything that you want to say to Alan, or just
Dr. Hoffman. Yes, before Alan leaves, I just have to say to Alan, to the audience, to everyone, Alan's a hero. He's a hero. Alan Parker, you're a hero in the pro-life movement. And I tell everyone, Alan's like my brother, because through the years, you know, I've watched and I've seen this man be so humble. And Alan, it was your humility. No doubt you've always stood for the women. I can remember years and years ago when you asked us to use our helpline number on those affidavits. But you were so, you know, I would talk with you about recovery and how important. And you even made the statement today. You said after recovery, you know, it's like after recovery, we are not here. We're here to do no harm. But once someone heals, that signing that declaration form be another part of their healing, of our healing. It was for me. And then to their testimony, Revelation tells us we're made overcomers by the word of our testimony. And that is what we've seen for over 20 years leading up to the overturning of Roe v. Wade and these wonderful affidavits that the Justice Foundation and Alan, like you were reading his book, felt so compelled to collect, and how all that was just a God thing. But I have seen this man, Alan, I just say to you, you have been anointed through the years by the power of the Holy Spirit. And I know that our spirits have been united and our hearts have been united. And it thrills my heart today to know that we merged with the foundation that wants to continue this. And just yesterday, I'll tell the audience, Alan's group with Operation Outcry had a practice listening session to get ready to give our testimonies to it's the National Association of Christian Lawmakers that's going to come up. And these are so important. And yesterday, to see the faces of women on there, some I've known for years, some were new, it was such a blessing. And to know that there are millions of others, hundreds of others, every state has these women that can speak up. And not just the women, I always say, also the man, the families, the grandmas, everyone can share. And that's what's so missing today. Education, and then you mentioned churches, Alan, and it is, we need to pray for pastors and churches. I've sat here just thinking, I think someday when I have time, I'd like to do a survey and call any pastor, just a list, to ask how many churches have ever allowed a woman who's had an abortion share their testimony on a Sunday morning. Give us 2 minutes. Just give us 2 minutes. Yesterday, we did it in a minute, because we want to make it short and brief just to educate. But it's so much work to be done. There's so much work that's been done. Praise God for the overturning of Roe v. Wade. And Alan, thank you so much. You, like I said, you're my hero. Of course, God is ultimately the one who did this, and all of the Spirit-led attorneys that were in the Dobbs case, and then how you contributed. Thank you so much, and I'm so happy that Dr. Hoffman had you on today, and because people got to be educated.
Thank you, Millie. And we all need to be heroes. I thank you for what you said, but God is calling us to be heroes, being willing to stand up. How do we overcome Satan? By the word of the Lamb, by the blood of the Lamb, and the word of our testimony, and that we love not our lives unto life. So we're all a hero. Even a mom staying at home with the children, that's a hero. Motherhood is a hero. So you don't all have to do things like I've done, but we, and he also said, you will be my witnesses in all the earth. When he ascended into heaven, he said, you know, wait. And at the time, the Greek word for witness was martyr. And it didn't mean being willing to witness unto death, but so many of the early Christians were martyred that it came to mean a witness unto death. But, and maybe that's what Jesus chose that word. But we're not advocating, and we're praying against persecution that leads to death, but even persecution is a blessing. Blessed are you when they persecute you and call you names for my sake. How many people are afraid to speak out because people might call them a name? You're anti-woman, you're homophobic or something. They just have names for us, but that's a blessing if you're doing it not for wrong, if you're condemned not for wrongdoing, but for preaching the name of Jesus or things like that. And you're right, Millie, on our website, women can still give their testimonies. We're going to take them to legislatures and courts across the country. The ones that have already been done, we're going to give like the packet of that state's women's testimonies to the pro-life legislators in that state. So they can say, both they've heard by their ears and I've read testimonies. I've heard the women of my state. I don't want any more women to be hurt by abortion in my state when we have a safe haven law. There's no woman reason for a woman. And in exchange for some months of pregnancy, which is substantial and serious, we're giving the woman relief from 18 years of parenting obligation. So that's a pretty good social compact, but killing the child should be wrong, and safe haven is better than killing a child. It's not the best way to live, but if you're in a bad situation or can't do it, don't kill the child, and we should take abortion off the table. It's not an option. We don't allow people to kill anybody else who's just bothering them or making their life terrible even. I mean, except, anyway, in self-defense with a weapon. And the baby is not an intruder. The baby is not an intruder. It's not a parasite. It's a blessing from the Lord. But even if the woman doesn't feel like that, she can safely surrender that baby.
Alan, thank you so much for your testimony and reversing Roe versus Wade, a heroic lawyer, famous. Yeah, and humble, you know, part of a group of attorneys. You know, this took an army of people to really, do this work. I am very interested in having you back on. You know, we gave the listeners just a taste of what's involved here. I'm going to put Camden in touch with you, and hopefully we can have you here in person someday soon and just really go through the history of this. I get a strong message here that it's important for people who are aligning with this mission to have a voice and to deal with the reality. Yeah, there's people who disagree, but there's also people who are really passionate about taking up this cause and defending the life of the unborn and being life affirming. And that means all life. And we live in a free country. And so that voice can be respected too, and that'll really help if people will start to be more vocal and enter the conversation and support this. So we really appreciate you having you here today. And I know that you had a hard break at 1 o'clock. It's 1 o'clock here, but it's 12 o'clock where you are.
Thank you for having me on the show. And most of our materials are free on our website. A lot of downloads there for you.
Can you say the name of your website?
All the profits go to the Justice Foundation, not me. So it's a good help to the organization. And I wish you the Lord's blessings upon your fundraising efforts. And this is something, giving away services for free is something that Christians should be doing. But then somebody's got to give the money to help you keep the doors open to give away the services for free. That's how we operate. So I'm hoping that brings you a rich harvest and helps support your work.
Thank you so much, Alan. Thank you for being with us today. Wow. Gentleman is part of history.
Yeah.
And I bet you, you know, just being from the Northeast here, that many people here are just meeting him for the first time.
Yeah.
And so we're going to have him back. I tried to get him to say his website that you could go to.
It's actually, I think you can just say operationoutcry.org.
Operationoutcry.org. Did I say the right organization?
It's the Justice Foundation.
I'm sorry. Gary, try to cut that out of there so we don't confuse the public. It's the Justice Foundation. And say the website once again, Millie, for the listeners.
Operationoutcry.org.
Okay. Is Millie sound okay as we're going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I can hear pretty well.
Okay, thanks. Gary, is that going to be okay?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, so Millie, we're going to do a segment with you. Do you have time?
Me?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. And I thought if I could share it about pregnancy and, you know, abortion and how people through the years we have met people that think because we're for abortion recovery that we're not saving babies. And Dr. Hoffman, we've had so many times, whether we were speaking in a church or talking with a caller on the phone that is pregnant, that all we have to do is ask, have you ever heard someone's story who's had an abortion? And we have had so many babies saved because the woman would change her mind that was calling us to see how much an abortion cost or you know, that she was being pressured to have an abortion and she was pregnant. So I just want people to know that when we that have had abortions can be healed to a place to help others, it is huge because it's our experience. It no matter, we're not political and we're not legal, but we are here for the healing. There's so much freedom that can come when a person comes out of denial. And just yesterday, I was going through some old files and I ran across this pastor's wife testimony, and she won't mind if I call her name Jackie. But she shared so much about the shame and how it was just like hot oil poured on her when someone would like mention it in church or whatever. And yet she had to go through, she already knew the Lord had forgiven her, but she going through a recovery program and working through those, the grief, because we destroyed a human life. But that is, no one can imagine what shame and pain that is unless you've been there. And many women are still in hiding and they're still wearing a mask like I was for 12 years and repressing it. And you know, the addiction that comes from it. I mean, just, you can just hear the stories of wanting to hurt ourselves and suicidal tendencies and actually attempts of suicide and suicide. So it's like it's there and it's a huge problem, and yet it gets so polarized politically. And right now it is so confusing in this whole political culture of what's, you know, of, of everyone being their own authority and not submitting to God's authority and his of life. And so anyway, I just wanted to say that, yes, babies are saved when we share our story. And then of course, when we educate and we provide, you know, referrals for that pregnancy care on the helpline. But
let me be clear to the audience that, you know, because we're talking about all of what the foundation is now, and a lot of people are just used to us providing counseling grants. And we're using this phrase, we're casting a vision that we fill these gaps everywhere. And now, and this is your phrase, we took it on, you know, filling the gap, you know, is also ministering to the people in the culture that don't have a voice. And so this, you know, what we're talking about here is the core part of the life-affirming crisis helpline of Concepts of Truth, which is now part of the foundation. We oversee that program. It's nationwide. It's 24/7. It provides crisis counseling for those facing pregnancy decisions and those experiencing post-abortive trauma. And to say this too, we'll have all kinds of people give us a call through this crisis line. It's not only about the issue of abortion; it is about the loss of life. And so we have women and family members who've experienced the loss of a baby through miscarriage, and other types of situations. These are all experiencing traumatic grief and loss. So the Crisis Helpline is an expert resource. Concepts of Truth have been doing this for 23 years. And now we're bringing this to our network. And so that's what we're talking about, you know, and we're really just diving deep today into like what all of that is. So Millie, you have a lot of testimonies and a testimony yourself. Now you've been on the podcast before, but there's probably a lot of people who are just hearing this for the first time. Could you share a little bit more, you know, testimony about, you know, what ends up, you know, how this ends up in post-abortive trauma? And there's this phrase now that's being used. It's moral injury. And I'm going to summarize this, but you can talk about this more because I know you're an expert in it. But when we come into conflict with things that we hold as true, you know, things that we hold as right, but we've been through a situation that brings us across that boundary, we've been encouraged by somebody or a culture to just in a moment of vulnerability to step across that, it causes this injury. You know, it transgresses a boundary of morality that we hold dear, but for a multitude of reasons, now we've gone across that, and there's been a lot of damage done. You know, that is to me the core of moral injury, and the research now that shows, wow, this is a really big thing in psychology. So I hope I'm doing that justice, but how am I doing with that, Millie?
Concepts of Truth within the foundation, Kaylin Carlson. She's working on her doctorate, if you remember, and she's doing a whole thesis on, you know, moral injury of abortion. And it's huge because she's done all this research about, you know, veterans and PTSD and the same, like it's crossing that moral conscience that, you know, God has instilled in us, right? I mean, it's there. We're created in his image. It's there. And so innately, we know when we've cross that, you know. I used to give an example, you know, of like a little two-year-old, right? I've got a three-year-old granddaughter right now and a little great niece is two. And when she's done something wrong, well, she'll go like this and hide her eyes. You know what I mean? I mean, how does that happen? You know, how do we innately know? It's there, it's huge. And yeah, the moral and spiritual part of abortion is it's so much for us to explore and educate on, and that's my heart. My heart is just that people will know that we're speaking this truth in love. We're not speaking any condemnation or judgment because we've been there. And we've all been, we all have a story, you know, whether it's the sin of abortion, sin of a extramarital affair or whatever. We all have stories, right? And sin in our life because we live in a fallen world. And sin is sin. But for me, you know, I'll just quickly share here. I did it yesterday in a minute. So I'll just say, you know, my story for the people that don't know, I mean, I was raised in church. I was married to my husband, Dale, who I'll be married to now 50 years this summer. And that's a miracle in itself, because so many people who have abortions, the marriages don't last or the relationships don't last. But, you know, Dale and I were both raised in church. We love the Lord. We were raising our one son that we had at that time, you know, in church and very active church. And I had a tumor on my bladder. And when I went to the doctor, they gave me this experimental drug to reduce the tumor. And during that 6 months time of being injected with that experimental drug, I became pregnant. And so when I was going for one of my treatments one time, the doctor said, "Oh my goodness, this is terrible. I have bad news. You know, you're pregnant." And I was like, "No, we want a brother or sister, you know, for our son, Jonathan." And he said, "Yeah, but," and I remember his hand now, but I didn't then. It's like, "Yeah, I know how you believe." And he put his hand up, but I didn't see it at that time. He said, "But if you were my wife," he says, "you need to have a DNC quickly before the baby's heart starts beating, because you could have, your baby could be a monster. You'd never forgive yourself, or you could die having a baby." So I left there in fear and panic and went to, you know, my husband, Dale, crying. And we called in our parents and shared. And I remember just the prayer was so short, because my mom and my mother-in-law just patted me and said, "Honey, you have to do what the doctor's telling you to do." And I honestly, at that moment, felt this relief. And I've talked to many, many young girls and women that say they experienced this relief when they knew that they, you know, were going to go get this abortion. The doctor never used that word in my case. He said DNC, but he sent me to an abortion facility. And I can remember the sign, "This is Save Your Baby," and ducking down and saying to my husband, "They don't know why we're here, do they, honey?" You see, we were not there to get rid of a baby. Like Alan said, people are confused or feel pressured. Most women are like in this situation, you know, that they're not supported. You know, statistics say that over 60%, 65% of women say they would never have an abortion if they had the support of the father, whether they're married or not. You know, I mean, it's sad to say, but if they'd had that support, they wouldn't have had. But here, my husband and I are going for this, believing the doctor, not getting a second opinion, you know. And anyway, like I said, I'm going too long, probably. You've got other things. But long story short.
Please continue.
Huh?
You're doing well.
Okay, but immediately after that happened, because I didn't know. I at that moment in time, God knew my heart. I was in fear and panic, and I thought I was doing what I had to do. And I at that moment, I didn't know. But immediately afterwards, when some young girl looked at me, about 16 years old, she looked at me sipping juice and said, "Was yours a boy or a girl?" And that's when this moral, spiritual realization, something came into my life, because I went, "Oh." And just to call it a boy or a girl. No, I was getting rid of dangerous tissue. And that's when it hit me. And that's when, didn't talk on the way home, get home and I start hemorrhaging and my mom saying, "What did I do?" And she says, "Honey, you know, I guess God would have taken care of this if we could have just trusted him." But so in my brain at that time, in my heart and my feelings, I didn't want to call the doctor. I was too ashamed. I went to bed for every night for 12 years, crying myself to sleep, saying, "Honey, what did we do?" And Dale would say, "Honey, we did what we had to do." He tried to help me. He tried to justify it. But all those years are denial and wanting to punish myself during the next pregnancy and all the things. But thank God I didn't take my life. I didn't get addicted to drugs like so many did, because I did know the Lord. I was dealing with this. I would say, "God, forgive me if I've sinned." But it took me 12 years to say that I did sin. You know, but during that time, I know that God is a compassionate, loving God, and He sees our heart. He sees right where you are today. He sees the girls and the women that are out there that are so confused, or they're angry and just, you know, getting down for this life to their bodies. But man, do we need, you know, a spiritual awakening. We need to notice life and the problems that it presents in our lives. And until that day that I heard another woman share, that's why it's so important for us to share. We give others permission to come forward when we share. And if someone's listening to this today, I pray that if you've never, ever spoken to anybody about it, or just privately with your family, you've never spoken to anyone else or never even shared, please call us. It's 866-LIFE. We're here to listen. We are here. Everyone has had some type of trauma in their life that answers these calls, you know, and so we're here to listen. And if you're having marital problems and you don't know the reason, or relationship problems, you know, it's like many times that abortion is that root cause, and it's just been pushed down and pushed down and going on and on. But anyway, yeah.
Billy, you know, so just all about this, the crisis helpline. People who are listening where this resonates, they can just pick up the phone and call us, and they're going to come into contact with one of our counselors on the phone through the foundation, completely free, there for you. And if you need follow-up care, if you need to get in touch with a counselor that you're going to see on site, Christian Counseling Associates will take that referral. You know, so you have a whole continuum of care. There's no longer a reason to suffer in silence and to be alone in this. And a lot of the people on the helpline, they have their own personal testimony. They've been through it. Mm-hmm. And they've had healing, and they're ready to meet you confidentially with compassion. And you know, people like me and you are gonna be there for them. You know, trained counselors. So that's available now, and has been, but now through the foundation, donors will fund the operation of that. That's nationwide. So we're really excited about that. And your experience, because. There's people out there who are saying, I never knew this. I never knew that this part of it. Mm-hmm. And what you're telling us, Millie, very clearly is there are many, many, many women. And this connects to husbands and to siblings. There's a saying that you have about one life. Can you tell the audience about that?
Abortion affects as many lives as a single life could. And that was coined years ago by my oldest son. And it's so true, because for every woman, you know, there's a man. There is a man that's hurting out there and drowning themselves many times in alcohol and pain, or, you know, drugs, whatever. And they've either paid for an abortion, or maybe their girlfriend or their spouse or whomever went and without their permission, you know, did it, and they feel like they're so, you know, not counted.
There's so many scenarios that happen that I think the general public doesn't really realize, because it's not talked about. And it includes the children that come after. You know, so I just think about to maybe give people a sense of what's going on. We just think of the sheer numbers that when COVID deaths reached 1,000 a day, it was a big alarm. Hmm. What you're talking about with abortion, it's over 2,000 a day. Mm-hmm. Right now. And it has been for 50 years. That, to me, when I see that kind of that scale, there are so many people out here that this abortion has affected, just, you know, through the lives that could have touched the family, all those people eventually struggle in some way, and a lot of time in silence. Call the crisis helpline. and talk to people like Millie, who will be there for you, and start the healing. We have that available for you. So Millie, you know, I want to transition to our life affirming advocacy nationwide at the United Nations. Let's talk about this, and we'll go to the end of this half hour. But if we could take about 5 minutes and talk about our UN mission, tell the audience about that.
I just had a donor last night. He was emailing me, and he was asking about the merge and asking about different things. And then when I mentioned, you know, that our services were continuing and that we had just been to the UN and our youth had been to the UN in May, in February, this past February, we had a youth panel, and how that they got to share from these affidavits at the UN for the first time ever, and how that changed some hearts and minds that were in the room. He came back and he says, yeah, I hope you get the UN straightened out. but anyway.
Yeah, a lot of people are listening and saying, the UN, like what? You know, but we're providing mental health resources to pregnancy centers nationwide and pro-life advocacy to the United Nations. And so we're not necessarily there to agree with everything that the UN does. And people have to realize that because we're an organization working in the UN, we have to be careful about how candid we get about it. But we're there to advocate for life, and there is a need. People need to be there to advocate for the life of the unborn. Mm-hmm. And this is going to have a huge impact, and that's what you do. And you're taking we're taking young adults, youth. You know, teaching them how to have a voice in this, and as well as professionals all across the board.
And we just, you know, got to have a virtual event, and we had in the virtual event, you know, we had Dr. Priscilla Coleman, who's done many, many studies and published in the British Journal of Psychiatry and things like that, and she joined with us. I mean, there's so much work to be done, and especially when you say youth, you know, my heart, I used to be a school counselor, so my heart is always the youth and the next generation of Christian counselors and this next generation of young people who know truth and know that it's, you know, based on a biblical foundation to have a voice and to do it and speak the truth in love and to be educated and to educate. I mean, man, it's a great mission. And I'm so excited. I'm excited about the merge, just so many things. But yeah, at the UN, Concepts of Truth was accredited back in 2015, and it was such a God thing. And if I ever write a book someday, I get to write it all down. I just remember this, and I think it's so important for people to know who we are, because we are there for life and for healing. And there's so many people that are coming there, nations of the world that are coming to the UN, that they want resources, they want help. We had someone just in February from Malawi who wants our sexual health curriculum. I mean, you know, it's like there's such a need for a recovery curriculum, a need to be trained. They want help, and they've come so many years and just hear all the bad of all the problems in the world. So if we can just be there to offer some resources, it's like a bright light in their lives. But I remember the day that they were going to vote on us to get accredited, and I was in a tinsy, and we couldn't get in the gate. Our badges had expired. We had these temporary badges, and the guy kept telling us, oh, your badge is in here, but you're out here. And we get cursed all the time. We get cursed out for, you know, people who can't get in. And I said, we're not going to curse you out, sir. We just need to get to this meeting. And I'll never forget, after about three attempts, Dr. Hoffman, the guard said, well, you just go over here in the visitor line. And when I went over there, and my colleague, we went in, I was so anxious, you know, we just got to get in, we're late for this meeting. And the lady goes, ma'am, calm down. If I have to let you in, I'll get you in through the roof, but I'll get you in, like that. And as soon as she said, I'll get you in through the roof, I had this vision, just this picture, you know, a picture in my mind of just when they let the, you know, the people who were sick down through the roof to, for Jesus to touch them and heal them.
And that's what you bring to this big place. And there's this this vision that we talk about, this picture that we want people to have in their minds, and it's ripples to waves. Mm-hmm. That every donor, you know, everybody who works with the foundation, it's like throwing a stone into a pond. And we look at that and say, you know, this is something, you know, it's sending a little message, and it's never going to be big enough. If people will step forward in faith, be part of this movement, what God can do is take this across the whole country. And in order to do that, we have to interface with places like the UN, mm-hmm. and we have to network and do that tirelessly. And we're willing to do that. It's going to take funding. It can be sustainable giving. Mm-hmm. You know, look at how far we've gone already. We have people here who will do this their whole careers, like you did, Millie. You know, for 23 years, you know, in another 23 years, how far will this go? And that is what we're offering to our donors now. And, you know, in this merge, I've met people from Arkansas who have been doing this for such a long time. And I want to thank them so much for the work that now we get to join. And Millie, you're gonna get a chance here in a little bit, because again, I was telling our audience that by the time they listen to this, our events are going to be over. But you're coming mm-hmm. to see us here in tomorrow, and you're gonna have about 5 to 7 minutes, you know, to address. We have about it's about 375 people all told in mm-hmm. these three events. Great people. They're going to be very excited to meet you. So I'm glad we had a chance to talk today. And folks, you're going to see Millie, you know, much more. She'll be around on the podcast from time to time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so great to have you, Millie. So I look forward to seeing you here in a day. And, you know, you'll get to meet Millie if you're out at our dinner auctions.
Yeah, I'll see you soon.
Thanks, Billy. Have a great day.
Bye.
And you too. Bye-bye.
So, Tom, that is Alan Parker and Millie Lace.
Yeah, it's like this mixture of, like, really heavy and really exciting all at the same time.
Yeah, there's a weight that I feel when I talk about this, just to get the gravity of what we're really talking about. And so yeah, like a heaviness in my head as we mm-hmm. talk about it, but also like, wow.
Yeah.
I hope that the audience begins to see there's a lot of stuff going on with the foundation. Mm-hmm. And again, it is, you know, that person out in the desert is the person who's lost, alone, and hurting. And one of those persons is the unborn child.
Yeah,
that if you will support us, we'll get to the deepest problems. Mm-hmm. We'll do that for you. That's this kind of network. And it is, sometimes I think about it all, it's intense. Mm-hmm. That's what our counselors are trained to do. You know, we'll fill in the gap. You know, the ripples that you send in these donations will become waves. Mm-hmm. And it'll have huge impact. You look at somebody like Millie and the impact that she's had over her career. And folks, we're talking to counselors too.
Yeah.
You come here and you do this work. You'll look back and what, you know, God has accomplished through us. You will not be sorry.
Yeah.
You know, come this way. We need more people mm-hmm. to do this. Donors, you know, people of the public, church leaders, business owners, family leaders, come this way.
Yeah.
There is exciting things happening that you can invest in here, and it's not going to be like the Taco Bell Chalupa. Even though, let me say again, we want Taco Bell as a sponsor, you know, but it's not going to be a Chalupa of regret.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you are going to, you know, really have a sense of value and accomplishment in your mm-hmm. donation here. You know, but Tom, I don't know. I can only imagine what's all going through your head after all this. So, you know, wherever you want to go with this, it's up to you. But, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to have you here on this segment is there's this other piece.
Right.
You
know,
if you're saying, well, what else is the foundation doing?
That's not enough.
It's
but
not
wait,
en- it's
there's
not enough.
More.
There is more. And that is our family life advocacy internationally that we do through our sustained giving that the donors will contribute. We provide sustainable mental health and rehabilitation resources in challenging international Christian mission areas.
Right.
So one of the things that we've had all along, we get calls from missionaries.
Mm-hmm.
We get calls internationally.
Mm-hmm.
The crisis helpline through Concepts of Truth, get that. And a Christian Counseling Associates, we get those calls.
Mm-hmm.
And so our policy is not to turn anybody away.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times people will give to somebody in Greensburg, will have a donor say, like, I want to make sure that the people in Greensburg are getting taken care of.
Right.
And what we want people to know is that your giving has allowed us for the last 7 years to take care of all of the needs.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're asking our donors to do is to trust God, that his provision will be enough, that if they give out of their sustainable resources, that if you give out of the extra that you have, and what we're seeking to fund all of this is the advocate donor.
Right.
The advocate donor is a person, church, or organization that will see us as a local and international mission.
Mm-hmm.
We'll give $125 a month or $1,500 a year.
Mm-hmm.
That if we have 300 of those donors,
mm-hmm.
and at the time of this podcast, we have 8. So we're encouraged by that. Thank you. But when we attain 300, we will take care of all of our mission needs through that sustainable giving.
Until we think of something else.
It will grow. And you know what we say to the public, like we're looking at, all the time on how to you know, make our financial needs sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so insurance funding, public foundations, business supporting us in larger ways, we're cultivating that too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the base of that is the advocate donor.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to give recurrently on in any amount, we invite that to start down that path. And we have people, especially involved in the pro-life movement, who are legacy donors.
Yeah.
Those donors are giving $10,000 or more a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know that there's a person listening out there now who has the resources to give sustainably at a high level.
Mm-hmm.
And know that we need you too.
Mm-hmm.
So the Family Life Advocacy International Program is right now in Liberia, West Africa. We were called there years ago by church leaders, and our contact there is Reverend Dr. Jerry Kula, and so he's been on the podcast before.
Mm-hmm.
You could look him up. He's been at the dinner auctions for the foundation. And they believe in our mission, and they said that we need help. So they in their country have, like everywhere, a problem of drug addiction.
Right.
And so the last part that we've been mentioning several times is that we're experts in helping people recover from addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to see people fall into the gaps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to see what will fuel somebody into a crisis where they will not be able to affirm life in their mind and heart and choose an abortion. A lot of times addictions are part of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so if you connect with us, regardless of where you are with resources, we're not going to turn you away.
Mm-hmm.
And so Liberia, West Africa, you know, a great country, economically challenged. And one of the most economically challenged regions in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can't afford any kind of treatment.
Right.
You are a farmer. And so this year, you know, we've been asking the question, you know, because we've been training pastoral counselors there, and we've been sending experts over to do that. We've been looking at the drug problem and the and other associated mental health issues. We came to the realization that one thing that Liberia has is great natural resources that are undeveloped. And that if we could, as part of this drug and alcohol rehabilitation, you know, bring people to residential treatment and give them a sustainable job, this could help them recover, move forward, you know, into society once they've gone through treatment. It could help pay for the treatment, make the treatment sustainable. One of our concerns is, how can we, you know, expand this? And then, you know, with the donations that we have, make that consistent. Because once we're there to help, and then we just can't start turning people away. You know, we want to take everybody that can come. And so the mission now, the international mission, is added on agricultural development to train people vocationally to farm. And it's culturally relevant. You know, one of the things that they have to do in Liberia is to import food because they don't produce enough. It's far, far, you know, less produced in the country than they need. And so if we were, you know, giving people the opportunity to recover from drug addiction and then have a sustainable job that could pay for their treatment and then help society. This is the kind of sustainable treatment program that we want to model, that anywhere in the world, you know, we'd be willing to do. But specifically right now, we're going to stay with this mission. We're not going to expand it until you know, we can really develop it. But we've bought 40 acres of farmland this year, and we're bringing people in like you to tell us how to do that. And so I just you know, maybe talk about the missionary opportunities, because this also broadens our network of people that we can get involved. We're going to go to the dinner auctions and talk about how, like, the main thing we're doing is counseling, but this is a great mission opportunity for farmers, for people who are contractors. Because we're going to need to build buildings, you know, and all kinds of associated things. And so churches that say, you know, how can I really want to get involved in something like this. Now, there's many more ways to contribute and build this mission. But what are your thoughts, you know, as somebody who has an expertise in farming?
I mean, one, it's just absolutely heartbreaking when you understand what's going on in agriculture and in the production of food, and the fact that anyone around the world, in this country, other countries, are struggling with starvation. Right now, we have a record number of corn in silos in this country. The price of corn is dropping because we've outproduced ourselves. It used to be, you know, it depends on how far back you go, but, you know, we went from virtually everybody being a farmer to now less than 1% of the population being farmers, because we have gotten that efficient at what we do. You know, the joke is around the farming community. Everybody used to milk. You know, everybody used to be a dairy farmer, because dairy farming has really outproduced itself. We produce more milk than what there is a demand and what we can reach to. You know, locally speaking, last time, you know, I heard there's about 90,000 bushel of oats between two grain bins here in little bitty Western PA. You know, and if you look at the idea that that type of technology is there, if you look at most of the exports of United States soybeans go to China. If you would take something, if you look at, okay, so like around here, you go down to the Beaver River, they get on barges, eventually flow down to the Mississippi, go around the Panama Canal, find their way to China. Think about it, if you took a string on a map and went through that and you just went over here and went to Liberia. Nobody's going to do that, though. The fact of the matter is that The technology is there. The resources are there. It's just the discipling, really. Mm-hmm. And it's the belief that, you know, these things are possible in sustainable farming, what it can do and what the options are. And if you look at the idea of, you know, like you said, the heroin epidemic that is still just so prevalent over there. And if you go, you get somebody clean and then you release them back to poverty. Where are they going to end up?
It's unsustainable.
Yeah.
It's just going to be a culture of death, a culture of relapse and addiction.
Yeah.
And so importing, you know, instead of thinking about like, we're just going to give food to the world,
mm-hmm.
which we've realized is unsustainable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for reasons we don't have time to describe, mm-hmm. it just hasn't worked.
Right.
And so there's starvation around the world, mm-hmm. but if we imported what we take for granted here, that we have overproduced,
mm-hmm.
and now, you know, we can build relationships in other countries, specifically for us, Liberia, you know, we're going to keep our mission focused until mm-hmm. we have success here, that we have a process of overproducing
mm-hmm.
in this area,
mm-hmm.
and then seeing where we go from there.
Yeah.
You know, and involving experts and, you know, doing that specifically for this drug and alcohol program so that we can scale it,
mm-hmm.
you know, but the opportunity to bring that all together because we have to.
Right.
You know, to really stretch the donor dollar
mm-hmm.
as far as it can go. Because, again, I want to make the point that we're in our seventh year of operation at the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
That we run completely off of public foundation funding and donors giving,
mm-hmm.
that we've taken care of every need,
mm-hmm.
you know, with the giving that has been available.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to continue to do so.
Mm-hmm.
So what we need to do is, you know, scale this operation to multiple locations,
yeah.
like we have here.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to do that, we need to be doing more than just counseling people.
Yeah.
It has to be comprehensive vocational rehabilitation.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to make sense to the country.
Yeah.
You know, in this sense, when people are starving, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we don't all the time think it's a big deal here, but you know it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can, yeah. you can speak to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, 20 years ago, I was over in Africa, and I mean, it really, I was on the other side in Tanzania, and I was just looking around like, wait, you've got the resources sitting right here in your dirt, and I would see the farming there, and I mean, I only got to tangentially talk to people when I was there. I was through a study abroad trip my senior year in college, but it's absolutely mind-blowing. You know, you talk about COVID. You know, in 2020, I think the numbers were somewhere between 1 to 2 million people worldwide is what COVID killed. And it was about 8 million people died of starvation in 2020. We know how to cure starvation.
Yeah.
You know, COVID was what it was. But wait a minute, we have it. The answer is food. The answer is seeds. The answer, how do we get this to people in a sustainable fashion? And the exciting part, I think, from a donor perspective is to realize how far your money will go and the impact that it has. There's, you know, you get that resource there. You get people who are there and committed and know what they're doing. And man, like you start impacting person after person after person after person because you know, we don't know exactly what we're going to grow over there yet, but, right. you know, what does that food look like for somebody who doesn't have it?
Tom, I always enjoy going to your church. You know, I've spoken there a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
Your church is, you know, great donor with the foundation. Mm-hmm. You know, we're just blessed by them.
Mm-hmm.
Right in the middle of farmland.
Mm-hmm.
Riding down the road, right and left, farm after farm after farm.
Mm-hmm.
Riding down the road in Liberia, it is undeveloped,
undeveloped.
As far as the eye can see,
mm-hmm.
it could be farms.
Mm-hmm.
This vision of ripples the waves.
Yeah.
I want that picture to be etched in our minds
mm-hmm.
that we can have an influence that starts
mm-hmm.
people looking at us and saying, wow, I can do that too.
Mm-hmm.
and we would be there on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So donors would fund us eventually being consultants year-round,
mm-hmm.
doing the tough work, facing the tough challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And we're used to doing that as counselors.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to come face-to-face with reality, and there is problems
yeah.
that have occurred that, you know, we're not the first people to think of this.
Right.
So we're willing to do that work.
Mm-hmm.
We have a great group of dedicated volunteers. And always remember that CCA is part of this, that there's a majority of people here at CCA are actively engaged in the foundation
mm-hmm.
And are willing to volunteer time and resources to contribute to this. And we could start a movement.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're being called to do. That's what Liberia wants to collaborate with us on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be comprehensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not looking at doing one thing. We're building this around our counseling program
mm-hmm.
and doing it sustainably.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we're not going to overextend ourselves. We're going to do what we can do.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the agricultural piece
mm-hmm.
is a way to expand this and bring in more of the church together. My home church is Charter Oak and mm-hmm. Farms all around Charter
yeah.
Oak. You know, so it's something that we take for granted. When you see that, you're seeing lives saved.
Mm.
And that's what we're doing with all of these projects.
Yeah.
We're going to be able to come back to you folks next year, and we're going to start to count the lives that have been saved.
Mm.
I'd want people to ask themselves, how much is a life worth?
Mm-hmm.
And as you listen to our mission of Concepts of Truth,
mm-hmm.
Concepts of Truth International, and keep in mind our counseling grants program as we continue to address the opioid epidemic,
mm-hmm.
I want people to ask themselves, how much is a life worth? Mm-hmm. And I know the hearts of our people.
Right.
They will be open to sustainable giving when we realize the reality of what we're doing together.
Yeah.
And I want to speak it here because these things operate in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Again, our primary vision of the foundation, the person in the desert, they're out of our sight. And what we will do is we will bring that into view.
Mm-hmm.
We will report to you about that work so that we can connect you with that need
mm-hmm.
and do that work. And, you know, Tom, you're a leader at CCA and just, you know, see all of this stuff going on. So you're going to be at our Newcastle event, but, mm-hmm. Tell them how we raise this money. You know, what's the dinner auction all about?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of ways that people can contribute, you know, obviously, attendance, buying tickets. And then when you're there, you have the opportunity to either engage in the live auction items, which all those are donated. So, you know, never too early to think about next year.
Yes.
If you're a business and you're like, oh, I would like to donate or I can have this, and you're looking all year around, and you're like, what do I do with this? Do I need a tax write-off? Gotcha.
Yeah.
You know, we have people who come and they donate things year after year. You know,
I had a person call and she just donated a grand piano. I don't
really?
Know. Yeah. I just saw it come over the email. And so people approach us with all kinds of items.
Wow.
That definitely is mm-hmm. just an example of businesses that come forward
mm-hmm.
With what they have. So it's wow. And so donations.
Yeah.
Tax deductible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to be any of the large things, you know, the baskets that goes to more of a silent auction function.
Silent auction
so,
baskets.
Yeah. Those are there's what is that term? Like there's the summation of the little things there's a mass to that. You know, those are very helpful, and it's a year round thing. So, you know, for a church, just to look at the option of, you know, giving to the FFCC as part of missions or benevolent fund. I know that's how my church, one of the ways that my church supports that. Thinking about it, you know, like we've done speakers at events for, you know, donations. You've spoke twice at my church, and we just recently have had Justin Kunkel come up last weekend, did a great job talking about addictions from a biblical perspective. Mm. You know, we'll come do that for a donation. You know, so I feel like there's one main way I'm forgetting. What am I forgetting?
Definitely you can go to the website.
Yeah.
And hit the donation button. And there's secure giving right there. Mm-hmm. You can, of course, send us in a check from your bank once a month, mm-hmm. and save us the credit card fee, mm-hmm. or we could arrange for an ACH. But there's a recurring donation button that you mm-hmm. can hit in our software that will just charge your credit card, mm-hmm. you know, if nothing else. And it's that we need the consistent, mm-hmm. sustainable giving to help our month-to-month operation mm-hmm. Needs. Mm-hmm. And if we had that, we could greatly expand this. But again, as an advocate donor, giving $1,500 annually mm-hmm. or $125 a month, you can be a pillar of support in transforming communities and lives. Mm-hmm. The FFCC, the foundation, is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. All of your donations are fully tax deductible. Mm-hmm. And once again, you can come to the dinner auctions, and we're going to give you a report every year. Mm-hmm. We want all of our partner churches, we want every single church listening to this to come.
Yeah.
And we'll give you the donor report, and we want you to be there to be part of it. We would love to pack out mm-hmm. you know, every venue that we go to. We broke attendance records this year. Mm-hmm. We're super excited about that.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a great time. So yeah, those are the ways that you mm-hmm. give. And, you know, you will enact people like Tom Weil. He is an expert clinician. And he's also an expert in agriculture. The people that are here have so many gifts. Mm-hmm. And with sustainable giving, you will send us off mm-hmm. To save lives. Mm-hmm. And we are ready and willing to do it. And this makes this effort sustainable, your giving. Mm-hmm. So give to the Foundation for Christian Counseling. Stay tuned for more from people like Tom and Millie Lace and Alan Parker. Mm-hmm. And recognize the connections that we're making. You know, as you come to the dinner auctions, as you see what's on our website from our donors, there's many, many people that are in this network now, and we hope people will join us.
Yeah.
So, Tom, would you pray for that?
Absolutely.
And pray for the mission of the foundation, and we'll end it here.
Yeah. Dear Heavenly Father, I just thank you for your goodness that in a world that has so much suffering in it, that we can have the privilege of bringing light and caring and compassion to the suffering and the darkness around us, Lord. And I thank you for the organizations, for Christian Counseling Associates and the Foundation for Christian Counseling, that you would just work through us and give us guidance and wisdom as we seek to do your goodwill to this world and to look at the vast reaches that you've given us this opportunity, Lord. I just think of Alan and the great things that he has done and just the humility that is just so apparent in that man, Lord, that we would emulate that to everyone that we come across with through all of these areas. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Amen. Thanks for being with us for the Foundation Podcast, and we'll see you next time.